we actually heard from Jesus that we are to love our neighbor as ourselves. Note, it's not love our neighbor as we love ourselves, but to love our neighbor as ourselves. That is, to treat our neighbor as if they are us and do what we would for ourselves. And last week we talked about the parable of the Good Samaritan, where we discovered that the neighbor is actually anyone who shows compassion to someone in need. Being a neighbor has nothing to do with proximity, but the neighbor is anyone who shows compassion. Compassion is key to being a good neighbor. Compassion for anyone. And then we add in today, where we just heard a part of Jesus' dialogue with his disciples shortly before he died. And what he tells them is this, and it's pretty clear, it seems. Whenever we give food or water to those who are hungry or thirsty or clothe someone or welcome a stranger or visit someone who is ill or in prison, we are doing it for Christ himself. This is what the true kingdom of God will look like. All people will be fed, clothed, and part of the community, caring for each other. No one will be left out of God's care if we care for our neighbor and those in need. And this was the interesting thing I realized this week, that it seems that most often when Jesus is talking about loving someone or caring for your neighbor, he's speaking about those in need. Jesus also said the poor, those who are experiencing poverty of spirit, of heart, of resources, will always be among us. Therefore, we cannot eliminate poverty or the need for people to help people. That will never go away. I've shared in talking to many people this week something that I learned at a justice course in theological school. Justice is not everyone having the same. Justice is everyone having enough. Our work is not to make sure that people have everything they want, but everything they need. And there is a big difference. If, Jesus said, we care for people in need, we have already inherited the kingdom of God. When did we see you in need and help you? The people asked Jesus, and he answers, whenever you do something for the least of these, you have done it for me. This week's going to be a little bit different for my sermon because I'm going to share with you a few of the things that I saw. What do you see? I wanted to go out this week and see and have an awareness of who our neighbors were, who the least of these were in our community. So what I'd like to share today is who I visited and what I found out this week. I wanted to see what the major issues were and what's being done about them. And I know this week I only saw the tip of the iceberg. On Monday, I went to have coffee with Elaine Vincent, who is the Chief Administrative Officer of the Town of Okotoks, and Susan Lauren, who is the Community and Protective Services Director of Okotoks. I sat down and had a coffee with them and asked them, how do we become good neighbors as a church? And how do we make this community a better place? And we had some really good conversations that opened my eyes to a lot of things with Elaine and Susan. When I got back from that meeting, I had an email from Debbie Posey, the community wellness manager in Okotoks, who had been thinking about a conversation we'd had a couple weeks ago and really wants to get together again and see how we can follow up on our discussion about doing something to connect people who are isolated or lonely in our community. So that was Monday. Tuesday, on my way into work, I stopped at the Family Resource Center and met with their new social worker, Laura Paget, who is connected here as the daughter of John and Lois Fast, and had a good chat with Laura. And they are always looking for ways to deal with food insecurity and housing, transportation, mental health, financial difficulties, those kinds of things. So I had a good conversation with Laura. Then I stopped over to see Joanne for a few minutes, who is in the same building, but she works as a social worker for the Calgary Rural Primary Care Network, and she works with the docs there who send her referrals, and she deals with mental health, addictions, domestic situations, a whole lot of things as well. And we talk a lot about what's going on in the community. After that, I thought I'd just continue on and popped over to the Okotoks Food Bank to have a little chat with Pamela McLean, who is the executive director for the food bank, and ask her what's going on at the food bank, which is planning to expand. They've only been out of this building and a very small space in this building about 5 years now, and now they have grown to such a place where they're looking to expand again at the food bank. And then later that day, I had a conversation with somebody I'd met with just last week, a local teacher who is with the Alberta Teachers Association, and she co-chairs the Diversity, Equity, and Human Rights Committee for the teachers in the Foothills division. And she, part of her committee's work is to run the local GSA network, which is a network of gay straight alliances at schools in Nanton and Okotoks, High River, Black Diamond, and in south of Calgary. And we are in discussions to host another Pride in the Park event next summer, partnering with the GSAs and the Alberta Teachers Association to do that, which I think is a great connection. The next morning, I went to a meeting of the Foothills Christmas Service Providers at St. James Catholic Church, to see what organizations are involved in providing programs and services throughout the Christmas season in Okotoks and the surrounding area for families and so on, which was a fascinating meeting. Do you know how many organizations do things at Christmas around here in Okotoks? A lot. I'm just going to name a few. Magic of Christmas has 6 buses that they fill up and go out and see families and drop off food hampers and gifts. In High River, Okotoks, Black Diamond, Turner Valley, a Santa goes on every bus and delivers directly to families. We have the Okotoks Food Bank, which does Christmas hampers and adopt a family program with them. We have FCSS, or Family and Community Support Services, for Black Diamond, High River, and Okotoks, who do food hampers and they refer to other agencies. We have Foothills County that fill in some gaps and give gifts, and they do smaller, they're a smaller group who do that. We have Western Wheel Cares, which collects money for other organizations. And they divide it up into organizations that apply to them. And we gave them $2,000 last year on behalf of this community from the Benevolent Fund that went to Western Wheel Cares. We also have the Salvation Army, who do food hampers for those who are outside of the food bank in Okotoks, and they also do their kettles and gifts and toys for families. We have, through the Victory Church here, Shop of Wonders, where families can go to an actual Christmas shop and shop for their families, and they get toys and food cards. We actually provided the food cards for groceries last year for the Shop of Wonders, $1,000 worth of gift cards for families, through the Benevolent Fund. We decided not to double up on other people's services, so we gave to them so they could use them. We have Rowan House, which just serves the families in this area, but they're in High River, but they serve families, victims of domestic violence, and they give small gifts to the families and have a Christmas dinner there. The Okotoks Family Resource Center, which this year is only going to serve seniors and singles because they know families are covered. They'll refer families to these other programs. There's another program called, many of these I had not even heard of till I arrived there, Baby It's Cold Outside. And they put together hampers for families and deliver them directly to families on December 23rd. And they serve the community right from Calgary to Nanton. And children under 12 get gifts through them as well. Then we have another program that I didn't know of. It's called Santa's Secret Service. And it's for seniors. 60 plus, and they're expecting about 5,000 to 5,200 referrals this year. And what they do is they partner up a sponsor family with a particular senior, and they shop just for those seniors, and then they get delivered to the seniors, the gifts for seniors only. They are partnered with 134 organizations who do referrals. And individuals cannot deliver to the seniors directly. They go to the organizations, and the organizations deliver them. So they get they have an Adopt-a-Seniors program. There are a lot of services by people wanting to help in this community, especially at Christmas. People in our community, neighbors helping neighbors. There's no question that it's a very generous community. And it is very heartwarming to see the work that people put into caring for others, because we have a lot of generosity in this community. So that was just some of my conversations and research this week preparing for this sermon on being a neighbor. And I just wanted to see for myself. Now, I want to offer a few observations that I had over this week and touching base with all of these groups and organizations. And you may have some observations of your own. But first I want to say it's no surprise that the greatest issues in our communities, and I don't think this is unique to here, is that most of them involve food security and housing concerns. Any place where I'm stopping in to talk, we're talking about food insecurity and lack of housing. If we could take some time to try to resolve some of these issues, a lot of the problems that people are experiencing today would be addressed. And I found out there's a lot more homelessness in Okotoks than I realized. It doesn't look like the cities where we see people living on the streets or under or in shelters or that sort of thing. What homelessness looks like in Okotoks is youth and families and seniors living with their family and moving around, or couch surfing for the youth, that kind of thing. But they're not at home. They don't have a home. But there's a lot of that. Most of the issues that we see today in talking to some of the social workers are the result of rising costs for healthy food, lack of affordable wages, and the limited skills of a lot of people to work, to budget, to cook, to get organized, to manage their lives. And this often becomes a generational problem. Nobody taught some of these people how to live well. Some are the result of illness or disabilities. But let me tell you this, a very, very small percentage of the problems are as a result of people either using a system or being lazy. You hear that a lot, and that is not the case. It's people in difficult situations. Most people don't want to be there. So we need to stop thinking that way. There are other reasons for people to be homeless or not have enough food or shelter. One of the questions that I asked many of the people I met with this week is how we could, I put a little few noises out of joint, I think, as I went along, but I asked the question is, how could we eliminate the need for the food bank? I just wanted to ask the question, how could we eliminate the need for the food bank? Why is it that food banks keep growing and expanding when we have so much affluence in our communities and so many resources? You know that food banks were initially meant to be temporary. They weren't meant to become institutions. They were a temporary solution to a declining economy and to rising food costs. They really only started, the modern food bank movement only started in the 1960s and became strong in the 1980s. Now they are permanent institutions in our communities, and the need is becoming greater and greater. And yes, they are not government. They are grassroots organizations of neighbors helping neighbors. But they don't seem to be eliminating food insecurity. So there has to be other solutions. Second, this is my second observation. There are a lot of people in our communities who are isolated and lonely, which contributes to health and mental health issues. There is also a lot of elder abuse going on in our communities. Julie has been working on a project for the town for a couple of years now on elder abuse. Talk to her if you want to know more about it. And the town is trying to address some of this. But often seniors are isolated and lonely and taken advantage of. People are not connecting, nor do they have a sense of belonging in community. And they don't have things to do or people to socialize with. And a lack of purpose and meaning can contribute to a greater strain on our mental, medical, and our community resources. Loneliness and isolation is an issue. My third observation. We are putting more money, resources, and people hours into helping people than there are people to help. Think about that. We're putting more money and resources and people hours into helping people than there are people to help. Those who want to do good are putting enormous amounts of energy into helping people, yet the problems seem to be growing. Part of the reason is that we're all doing our own thing. We're duplicating services and in many cases keeping people in difficult situations, often by the good work we're doing. There's another underlying principle in this one. People who like to help like to help. They like to feel like they're doing something good, and they perpetuate organizations that do good. For example, those who donate at Christmas or volunteer at the food bank perhaps get more out of serving and a better feeling of serving than the people who are receiving. We like to feel good about what we're doing. Volunteering, giving food, ringing bells at the kettles for Salvation Army, and giving makes us feel good and useful and purposeful. It doesn't necessarily make people on the receiving end feel good, but it makes us feel good. And to top it off, not only do we feel good by doing it, we expect people to thank us for doing it. Like we deserve it. From people who are just trying to get by. How can you be thankful in situations where you're struggling to survive? Fourth, and this is really important, and this was pointed out to me very clearly this week. The government does not have the resources or the power to resolve social issues in our country, nor should they. They can provide information and some financial support, but it's up to people at the grassroots level to address any concerns in their own communities. We have at the most a few elected officials in each of our communities. What good are they doing? They can take information back to the government, and we can get some resources from the government. And as much as we seem to think the government should solve our country's problems, they cannot, and if we expect it, we are deluding ourselves. It has to happen from us. We have to be the solution. This week we saw the results in the Western Wheel of a survey that was posted a couple of weeks ago that asked, what is the best way to address affordable housing? Right? The tiny house movement, it was stopped. And so they were asking, how do we address affordable housing in this area? And the response was, some people said private enterprise, 28%. Public fundraising, 1.2%. Through governments, 11.9%. Or a combination, 58%. And that's how it's got to work. Government will help with a few resources, but the people in the communities have to participate. And fifth, and this is where the church might be able to do something. What I found is there is no group or organization pulling people together in communities to have the big conversations that need to take place. There needs to be a space and a place for invested people to come together, not to defend their own programs or services, but to look at the issues from all angles and to take steps to find solutions that are better than what we've got. And it needs to form at the grassroots level, No organization, no one organization providing services or government is going to do that big conversation. We can do better if we have the will to do better. We just need to try. Sue Monk Kidd, in her book, The Invention of Wings, says, if you must err, do so on the side of audacity. We need to address chronic societal issues differently. We need to be neighbors in a different way. And we must dare to be audacious about it. It has to be a collective effort by a variety of people and organizations who are willing to do things differently and not be protective of their own ways of doing things. Tell me, my friends, what do you see in our communities? Not with our eyes, but with our hearts. And how might we not only follow Jesus, but care for Jesus by being a part of the solution, which may not look like what we're doing today. I have this dream that we might be the first larger community in Canada to eliminate the need for the food bank by doing it differently. We won't eliminate food insecurity. That's not what I'm saying. We're not going to eliminate poverty or food insecurity, but how do we provide the means for people to live well? Last week, I suggested that you take on one cause and devote your time and energy and resources to making that one cause your own. And the church needs to do that as well. We can't solve all the problems. We're limited in our own resources and people. But neither can we contribute to the problems. And we need to rethink how we're doing things. We have to have new ways of looking at things and new solutions to old problems that continue to be perpetuated. They're not being resolved. So there's got to be another way. Because what we're doing is not working. The problems seem to be growing. What do you see? And how can you help? Because our scripture told us today that whatever you do for the least of these, you are doing for Jesus. So I give the last word to Sue Monk Kidd, who again in The Invention of Wings, through her character Lucretia Mott, said, we're all yearning for a wedge of sky, aren't we? I suspect God plants these yearnings in us, so we'll at least try and change the course of things. We must try, that's all. Let's spend a few moments in reflection.